Hi, everyone. Welcome into the DreamShake.com. This is Tom Martin. We're talking Jeremy Lin and the New York Knicks and now the Houston Rockets. And we are joined on the phone with PostingandToasting.com's Seth Rosenthal. Seth, you're in Vegas right now watching the Summer League. Is this the appropriate place to deal with the news like this?
No, and I just got to Vegas this morning, so it was a sleepless night and then an early morning flight, and the whole ordeal was very, I don't want to say tearful, but it was very contemplative, and it was sad. I'm feeling very sad right now.
I'm sorry to have to put a knife in you. Would it have been a sleepless night anyway?
Well, probably. And the past few nights have been sleepless, just worrying about how this is going to shake out. So in a way, I'm happy that it's over.
Well, what did you think when it was all going down? Because there was a whole period where they weren't sure, and the reports came out that the Rockets had made the offer the Knicks would not match, but you never really had a perfect idea. Did you think in the end the Knicks would eventually match despite reports?
Oh, you know, it came and went. At the very beginning, you know, the report stemmed from, I think, a radio broadcaster in South Carolina. So it was like, this clearly isn't true. And then it started to come out, you know, from Yahoo and from places like that. And I think by the end of the weekend, it sort of seemed like the Knicks were definitely going to go away from Lin. And then over the ensuing couple of days, it backed off a little bit. You know, they were reconsidering or they hadn't actually decided, which was bizarre but understandable. And then even, you know, right up until the last second, there was a sentiment among Knicks fans and, you know, an inkling within myself that New York, as some sort of payback to the Rockets, because they're clearly not feeling happy about Houston Rockets right now, as some sort of payback, they were going to, you know, leak that they weren't matching and leak and really make it seem like a sure thing, and then match at the very last second. So, you know, right up until the deadline last night, there was a tiny bit of hope of that. But I think, you know, midway through the day, it had been diminished into a very infinitesimal hope it wasn't going to happen.
Well, what's your thought on this? I mean, I know you've had some support for Lin on Twitter and in your posts, et cetera. I mean, was this a good idea for the Knicks or not?
I think it was a 100% inarguably terrible idea. I think that, first of all, because I think Jeremy Lin has shown that he has enough promise to be invested in. I think he's a good player, and I think he's going to turn out to be a very serviceable starting NBA point guard, if not a star. So that's the start. But I think even if that wasn't the case, or even if, you know, the Knicks weren't sure about that, which they clearly weren't, the financial reasons for not bringing him back has been rendered moot by the other stuff they could have done. You know, the cap that they were going to take in the third year could have been obviated with the stretch provision. They pretty much, they had recourse for all of the poison pill in the dream in the deal if he didn't pan out. So, especially for a team that has been overspending on talent for years, has been overspending on non-talent for years, and has, you know, was overspending until right up to this week when they gave up too much for Raymond Felton and Kirk Thomas. And, you know, in a team that was supposed to be all in on this season and all in on the next 3 years and just willing to spend anything to commit to a championship, it seemed like it was a petty move that was done for the wrong reasons, and I think it's pretty much indefensible whether or not they think he's going to pan out to be a great player.
Well, speaking of the wrong reasons, there was Yahoo had the reference to this, but there was an article that came out, I think it was Frank Isola who did this, saying that James Dolan, the Knicks owner, basically felt betrayed. And he used other words to kind of describe what he felt when Lin signed the offer sheet. What's your reaction to hearing an owner make a decision that may not have solely been about betrayal, but, you know, played a part in that? What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to know exactly what the motivation was. Again, I have trouble believing that it was financial, at least not purely financial, especially because Glenn Grunwald, the GM, is a cap guy. He, you know, if we knew that they could have used the stretch provision, he definitely knew that. And so, you got to assume that Dolan was involved. I'm not going to just take Frank Isola at his word because he's Frank Isola, but I think it's safe to assume that Dolan was involved, and I think based on his track record, I think it's not surprising that, you know, Lynn doing something that he felt was, somehow a betrayal. I don't really understand how that's the case, but it's definitely not out of the question that Dolan misread something, felt betrayed, and then was willing to make a massive business decision, and I think a lot of people would say a massive mistake based on that alone. And, you know, that's sort of par for the course. He is not a basketball guy. He's very emotional and sort of petty, like I said before. And so maybe we'll never know really what was the motivation behind it, but I wouldn't be surprised at all to know that at least part of the decision was just based on a aversion to Lynn, to his character that was developed after he renegotiated the contract. Especially because they didn't appear to have any, you know, if they wanted to get rid of him, they could have done a sign and trade weeks ago. They could have worked on that before the Rockets made an offer. And so the way things went down makes it seem like they changed their mind toward the last second, and that leads me to believe that they were, you know, just irritated that he agreed to sign an offer sheet that they didn't expect.
Talking to Seth Rosenthal with PostingandToasting.com. Seth, describe Lynn as a player. I think some people think he's either, you know, the next big thing at point guard, and they might be just a bit uninformed. But some people think he's also, you know, just a sole product of Mike D'Antoni and the pick and roll. Where do you think he falls? Is he somewhere between those two extremes?
Oh, it's definitely somewhere between the two. His great numbers during that Lynn-Sanity stretch were definitely inflated by the fact that he was playing in a D'Antoni offense, and more so, I think, by the fact that he was playing on a team that was missing Carmelo Anthony, missing Amari Stoudemire for a lot of the time. And so he was pretty much the best player on the floor. And so he was creating for everyone, creating for himself. And so I think that, if anything, is what inflated his numbers, which, you know, that's not really a knock on him. If he's able to step up like that, that seems like a good thing.
I
don't think he's the next big thing. I don't think he definitely translates to, you know, being a star. He's not like Kyrie Irving out there. But he's a very savvy pick and roll point guard. He's excellent in transition. He knows how to lead a break like a veteran. You know, he stays in the middle of the floor, makes the right pass, and can finish himself. That's another big thing. He's a great finisher. He can finish on either side of the rim, and he's creative. He has a good set of fakes around the basket. He's athletic enough to get from one side, you know, to avoid the defender and to draw contact and finish anyway. In general, quicker on his feet, higher off the ground, stronger than people, I think, give him credit for it. And he has weaknesses. He loses his dribble a lot. You know, he's really turnover prone, and I think it's because he doesn't protect his dribble and stay as low to the ground as he should. He's a streaky shooter. He's got not a great looking jump shot. He gets it to go, but not on a regular basis.
Is it me, or does that jump shot look like the most Harvard, you know, stereotypical white guy shot ever?
It is a very Harvard-looking jump shot. It looks like the way someone would teach you to do a jump shot. Like, it looks, you know, Walt Frazier always talked about aiming your shots. Jeremy Lin always looks like he's aiming his shot. But he's not nearly as bad a shooter as people say he is.
Yeah.
He's not a bad shooter. He's a streaky shooter because he's not, you know, that's not really his specialty.
It's like a Harvard basketball camp shot is what I think. It's like when kids go to Harvard basketball camp, that's what they teach them.
That's accurate. It kind of looks like it was a shot you learned when you were much younger and couldn't really hold the ball yet. You know, it looks like the way a little kid would shoot a little bit. But it goes in. He's a decent shooter.
Yeah, well, I mean, how do you think he fits? Because I'm not going to go out there and say Kevin McHale's offense is like D'Antoni's, but McHale's is really lazy in a way that allows for creativity from the wing guys. Is that something that Lynn fits into well, you think?
Yeah, he's a creative player, and I think, you know, as long as they're setting picks for him, as long as they're trying to get out in transition somewhat, they can get the most out of him. They can get the most he can offer right now. And, you know, that's not to say he's a bad half-court point guard. He throws a decent entry pass. He, you know, knows how to direct people in the half-court. But I think it would behoove the Rockets to get moving in transition because he's so good at moving with the ball. He's already such a good outlet passer. He throws a mean lob on the move. And so, you know, and I'm sure the Rockets recognize that. I'm sure they've run all the data on him and know, you know, what his strengths are. And I'm sure that'll be reflected in the offense that they run for him.
I love when anytime you reference the Rock, this is not you. Anytime anybody references Houston, it's always they ran the data. They got the, like, their gigantic machine, and they just press the buttons, and all of a sudden, like, poof, like, here it is. Here's your result. Like, here's your player.
Well, isn't that Daryl Morey's like a robot, right?
Yes.
Sort of like type Jeremy Lin onto his tummy, and then he spits out information. That's how that works, right?
Daryl Morey is not a real person. He was constructed in a nice MIT studio, whatever. And we've not confirmed this, but multiple sources say that this could be the case. Seth, what do you think the thing? Because when you think Lin and you think Houston, the obvious comparison—it's kind of sad—but it's Yao Ming and it's Asian fans. What do you think Lin really does? Because you can, it's tough to put a number on the impact that he has financially and in improving a fan base. But what do you think, you know, from what you can tell, is the realistic off-court impact for Jeremy Lin?
I don't have a great sense for that for a couple of reasons. You know, I think part of the financial windfall he brought the Knicks was the fact that it was novel. When sanity was unlikely last year, whereas if you put up good numbers in Houston, it's not going to be totally out of the blue and just this huge storm out of nowhere. But there's absolutely no question that there were, it seemed like the amount of Knicks fans, just even in New York, doubled as soon as he was, you know, after the first couple of games. And it wasn't just an Asian thing. I mean, he obviously drums up a lot of support from an Asian fan base, but everybody, just casual fans, love the kid because of who he is. Because, you know, it's such an unlikely story because he comes from Harvard and because he's Asian.
Yeah.
And so, and then on the flip side, now that he's leaving, I mean, you would not believe, not just like reading it on Twitter and in comment sections, I'm getting direct emails and messages on Twitter saying, you know, thanks for writing a Knicks blog. I'm never going to read it again because I hate the Knicks now. These are like 20-year fans who are making these decisions based on Jeremy Lin. He has a magnetic quality to him, you know, in part because of just who he is and in part because of what he does, because he's a good player and he's a really likable guy and he seems like a great teammate. And he, you know, again, I think it'll be diluted somewhat in Houston by the fact that he's, you know, now he's well compensated and well known. But there's no question that he single-handedly will bring a lot of new fans or, you know, drum up old fans from the Rockets. And you got to assume that's going to make them a ton of money. And I'm sure the Rockets already have a pretty well-established fan base, you know, of Asian Americans and people in Asia because of Yao Ming. So there's already sort of a built-in market for him.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think knowing what he did in New York will help bring new fans to Houston. I'm wondering, though, let's say that it's not Jeremy Lin, but it's some, like, really short white guy who had the exact same circumstances, was passed over by multiple teams, came out of nowhere and did all this. To me, looking at what happened in New York, it was less of the fact that he was Asian and more of the fact that it was a surprise story. And I think the impact was less on the Asian crowd than it was on the non-basketball crowd. Is that right?
I have trouble measuring the proportion, but there was definitely a lot of both.
Yeah,
you know, it was a thing where just everyone. I mean, you know, I don't live in New York City, but everyone just around the area was talking about him, Asian or not. There were just, you know, people. I would go to friends' houses and parents and sisters and stuff who had never watched basketball in their lives were really into it.
Yeah,
and again, I think a lot of that was the novelty of the situation. But again, yeah, there's something magnetic about the guy. There's something about his story. And the fact that he's genuinely good at basketball, this doesn't feel like a fluke, that draws people in. And then, you know, on the other hand, there are a lot of people who I think are just really inspired, you know, Asians and Asian Americans who are just really inspired by who he is. And there's a huge chunk of that, too. Now, I have trouble telling which is bigger, I wouldn't downplay the fact that he's Asian American. I think that means quite a bit to a lot of people.
Uh-huh. Well, last question here, I'll let you go. What is the, having seen him more than most people because, you know, you can see him. And I guess I think you have practice credentials, right? Is that right?
No, not for the Knicks. The Knicks don't do that. But I have seen, you know, I saw him dating all the way back to summer league.
I was going to say, well, you've seen enough of Lin, though. What do you think he can get better at? Because I think right now we're looking at a 23-year-old point guard who most people now, whether out of bitterness or they just want to hurt the guy, keep saying he's going to get worse. What do you think is the opposite spectrum of that? What can he improve?
Oh, he's got a lot to improve. Yeah, you know, we were talking about the jump shot. I don't think his form needs to change, but he just needs to get, you know, more comfortable in more situations, more spots on the floor. His defense, I doubt his defense is going to improve a lot, but it's not as bad as people say, but it could obviously improve. He obviously needs to learn to take better care of the ball and sort of, you know, when he can get away with driving through traffic and when he can't. There were a lot of times where it looked like he was trying to make a move, but he was just doing it in a sliver of space that was not big enough for him. And I think that's, you know, that's something that's a part of just getting used to NBA basketball and NBA defenders and just bigger, stronger, savvier guys. And so I think that must improve. I think it's bound to improve just, you know, once he gets his pocket picked enough, he's going to learn not to do certain things with the ball. He needs to get better going to his left, which, again, like, you know, that's, you practice that and you get better at it. So I don't see why he's not going to improve that. But other than that, you know, he's a very well-rounded player. He's got a lot to work on. You know, I don't think it's out of the question that he, you know, won't amount to much. He won't be a great player. But I think I've already seen enough to be fairly certain that unless something throws him off, that he's, at the very least, a serviceable NBA point guard, probably a starter, if not, you know, a starter that is worth the money that he's about to be paid. And that's the floor of my assessment of him. I think he really has the potential to be a star.
Okay, so yes or no question real quick. The Rockets' cap hit is $8 million per year, just over, for Jeremy Lin. Is he worth that much money?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm sold. Yes. Seth Rosenthal, postingandtoasting.com with SB Nation. Seth, we appreciate the time, man. Have fun in Vegas.
Thanks a lot.